From the Victorian corsets, the high heels of the 1950s housewives, clothing trends have often constrained women's bodies and movements. But with activewear taking over both the streets and the runways, what does this new trend of fit femininity mean for women? Here to break down this new trend is Dr. Julie Bryce. Thanks for joining me, Julie. So let's just jump right into it. There's been this change in the fashion world where fitness gear is the new norm. But you say this change is actually deeper than that, kind of a symbolic change in our modern definitions of femininity. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, for sure. So this idea of fit femininity, it's been around for a while, but there's a lot of different components to it. And what kind of my research is looking at is those different components and both critiquing it and seeing some benefits of it, but there's a lot of critique around this idea. And part of it is that there is this idealized femininity that a lot of Western societies want to live up to, and that they kind of put women against, that women should live up to a particular type of femininity. When we know that all women and all people are so different and there are multiple types of femininity, but fit femininity is kind of a very standardized and there's borders and boundaries around it. So part of that encompasses a quote healthy lifestyle. So that means a lot of women are expected to go to the gym, to eat quote healthy, whatever that might mean. They're expected to really appreciate their body and their body is a temple. And they're expected to live up to these standards that are really hard to maintain. So you're supposed to have a fit and healthy lifestyle. You're supposed to look a certain way. And that's kind of where activewear comes into play. We're seeing that the fit femininity is kind of the fit body. And that usually in Western societies is a thin toned body. So it's not just thin, but you might have some definition. You might be have a little bit of a small musculature because there's boundaries on how much you can go with that musculature. Because if you're too muscly, then you're masculine and you're unattractive. So there's these ideas of what your body should look like. You also should be kind of heterosexually attractive and kind of heteronormative, right? You should oftentimes be white. I mean, that race plays a part in this as well. And so the body becomes kind of this idealized form that women and a lot of people are expected to live up to. And activewear plays a role in that. In the article, I think that will be referenced, there's this idea that activewear actually shapes the body a little bit, right? We have like butt sculpting leggings. So we're supposed to have the booty now. That's another component that's become part of it. You have high-waisted leggings so you're supposed to suck in your fat and be thin and toned. And there goes that flat stomach idea. And there's sweat wicking. So women aren't supposed to sweat, particularly in certain places. So there's all these kind of standards that are being put up for women to live up to. And there's a lack of acknowledgement that women and people are completely different and that they live different lifestyle. They had different obstacles, they had different barriers. If you know, we think about the healthy lifestyle quote, some people can't afford a gym membership or they have kids at home that they can't get childcare for. So there are a lot of barriers to these ideas, but often those barriers, those ideas are just ignored. So in a nutshell, this idea of fit femininity is that women and other people are supposed to live up to a very narrowly defined ideal. And when bodies and people don't live up to it, there's critique and there's ridicule and there's stares in public, and activewear does play a role in that. Just go to any store and see the advertising on activewear and you'll see these ideas kind of be propagated there.
So one of the interesting points that you brought up is how activewear kind of shapes our body, well, women's bodies that they're targeted at women, you know, with the controlled waistband and recently, you know, those lovely bum scrunchies in the tights to kind of emphasize that small waist, big hips, because that's the kind of in trend body style, if you will. This is obviously more commonly seen Black and Hispanic cultures. Would you say that this has links to appropriation of Black and Hispanic cultures that we've kind of seen quite a lot in mainstream popular culture as of late? Or is that just a bit of a stretch?
No, that's actually something I've written about in my research, is the appropriation of the Black and brown female body with a lack of acknowledgement of where this really came from. And there's a lot of wonderful Black feminist scholars kind of working in different departments, different fields who are exploring these ideas around how mainstream society often takes these ideals that are kind of appreciated in a lot of Black and brown and indigenous cultures and different ideas, and takes them and kind of reappropriates them and turns them around. And we're seeing that a little bit with the booty in particular. So we take this idea of this big booty and we think back to that fitness kind of thing I was talking about earlier. the idea that you can get a booty by working really hard, by doing squats, by wearing particular leggings. So we're creating this booty, but we're failing to acknowledge the history of the booty and the role of the butt and the booty in a lot of, particularly in African-American contexts, and how that really played a big role in a lot of African-American cultures. And so there is this complete lack of acknowledgement of the role of the booty and the role of these different body shapes and types in other cultures, and the history of critique of Black and brown bodies by mainstream culture. So there's a long history of saying, oh, that's disgusting, that's gross, but now it's switched, now it's cool, and we all want one. And so there's definitely a lot of history around that, and there's some great feminist scholarship around the appropriation of the Black and brown bodies in mainstream culture. And we're definitely seeing that with the booty, like you said, the booty scrunching and the butt sculpting and all that, oftentimes on white, thin models in advertising. So there's kind of this lack of representation that goes along with it as well.
Along with that, you've said that this fit femininity ideal, if you will, you have to be skinny but toned, you know, you've got to have, you know, small waist, big hips, can't sweat. It's all very restrictive and focused on, you know, fitting all different types of women into this one mold. However, is there any upside to this change in, you know, modern femininity, or is it just all like, you know, controlling women's bodies? Is it all negative? Yeah.
I think one of the things that my research has really talked about is the pros and the cons, though. So there's definitely a massive critique of the activewear industry, of the clothing themselves, of the ways women's bodies wearing activewear are perceived in public, and the objectification of women's bodies. And there's definitely a lot of that negativity. But there is another side that we can think about as well. And that's what, when I talk to my participants about their experience in activewear, they highlighted a lot of the positives about it. They loved that it allowed them to run after their kids, or to go to school, or to sit comfortably in their office, whatever it was. It allowed them to be more functional than, say, other types of clothing and other trends have been before. So there was this idea of, I can be functional. A lot of my participants even talked about not caring what they look like in activewear. They chose activewear because it allowed them to move. And that's a little bit different than a lot of other historical clothing trends that we've seen. And there's also this idea that women should be and should always look a certain way and have all these kind of standards put on them. But a lot of my participants said, you know, screw the standards. I don't care if I sweat. Like, I'm working out, and I'm really, my activewear allows me to do that. So we're seeing a lot of the way women use activewear is very different from some of the critiques that can be made about it. And we're also seeing a shift actually in the past 3, 4, 5 years of a lot more women-owned activewear companies coming to the fore. And with women-owned activewear companies, a lot of them are really recognizing the critiques, and they're making those critiques of activewear, and they're changing it. Hine is a wonderful example. Hine is a female-owned company in New Zealand, and they use models of all different ethnicities, all different sizes, all different shapes. And they actually show like rolls of fat, and they show cellulite, and they show things that we're not used to seeing. So they're kind of flipping it on its head, all the advertising, and saying, no, every single body should wear theirs. We're seeing other activewear brands by women being designed that are more modest for women who prefer to cover up for various religious reasons, or maybe they just prefer to cover, and more modest. So we're seeing long sleeve activewear. So we're actually seeing a lot of female led businesses kind of buck the trend, if you will, and change it for the better to allow everyone to have access to it and enjoy activewear. So yes, there are definitely a lot of critiques that can be made around it, but we're also seeing there's changes being made. The way women use activewear is different. It allows them to move and be functional. So we're seeing a little bit of positives as well.
With the kind of change in, you know, female-led companies, like you mentioned, do you think that saying activewear such as this can kind of, obviously there is, you know, functional aspects to it, but like the core focus rather than to be like the aesthetic, which, let's be real, like examples like the booty scrunch are really about aesthetics rather than function. Do you think that there's a trend coming where maybe women's fashion is just moving towards more functionality than the right
aesthetic
look?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a really good question. I think time will only tell, because you can flip everything on its head. You know, Nike, for example, now is creating their own gender neutral line. So we're seeing like bigger, massive corporations kind of becoming more inclusive. But even with that, you could critique it and say that they're just doing it to capitalize upon what kind of the public is wanting right now. And they're still just trying to make a buck at the end of the day. So will fashion ever move into a more completely functional direction where it's not about aesthetics? I think time will tell. But what I notice, at least in my participants or with focus groups, is the way women, and because I only interviewed women, the way women are engaging with their clothing and activewear clothing is slightly changing. The way they're engaging with how they feel about their appearance outside of the gym is changing, like feeling confident to wear their hair in a messy bun and be super sweaty and not care about it. That's, I think, to me, is changing a little bit about that. And it could be the participants who I just happened to interview. I do think time will tell, but I think at least we're seeing a little bit more representation of more diverse femininities being presented in the activewear industry. Slightly. I want to say slightly. Always there's a caveat there.
Well, hopefully we see more diverse and functional fashion trends in the future. Thank you so much for joining me. That was Dr. Julie Bryce breaking down the new trend of fit femininity. To catch up on past episodes or to make sure you don't miss a single ep, follow Yours, Mine and Femme on Twitter and Instagram at YMF_2SER.